May it please the court, I'm William Shirley. I represent Mr. Pugh in this case. Your Honors, I'd like to quote from a case, one of your cases, Spiller, which states that prosecutors are not to indict defendants on relatively small amounts of crack cocaine and then up those amounts at sentencing. And this is what we have in this case. Mr. Pugh was caught with 6 grams of crack cocaine. He was charged with possession with intent to distribute more than 5 grams of crack cocaine. And by the time sentencing was finished, we were up to 1,000 grams of crack cocaine, which is 160 times what he was caught with and more than 200 times what he was charged with. He had no idea that he would be sentenced to this extent. What was charged in the indictment? What was charged in the indictment with was intent to distribute more than 5 grams of crack cocaine on or about March 18th, year 2001. At sentencing, evidence was brought in going back to 1993 as far as what Mr. Pugh actually dealt with. So we're not looking, we went outside the period of the indictment to look at how much he was, what was his relevant conduct. This is similar, but differs a little from that Spiller case. In that Spiller case, the defendant was charged with intent to distribute between certain dates, between November of 1998 and July 1999. And although in the Spiller case, the defendant was caught, I believe, with 4 grams and eventually went up to 28,000 grams, that was for a period of time that was stated in the indictment. Here, there was no such range in the indictment. We were looking at a specific day. Obviously, this is a case of the tail wagging the dog.
And do you have any case law to support that position? Is it your position that on that basis alone we should reverse the fact that the indictment charged a specific small quantity and we end up, in terms of relevant conduct, with so much more?
Well, you've got the Robinson case, the Spiller case, the Bacallo case.
But there are distinctions like you drew in terms of Spiller.
That's correct. I don't have any case law, Your Honor. But if this is a case of the tail wagging the dog, then there is that issue of whether there's a higher standard of proof, burden of proof on the government, whether it's just preponderance of the evidence or whether it's something more like clear and convincing.
Yeah, well, we've addressed that before and come down on the side of preponderance of the evidence, right? We've never said we were going to go to clear and convincing on the relevant conduct.
I believe that there is a case cited in my brief which mentions that there may be a higher standard of proof.
Maybe. It might be wishful thinking, too.
Well, I guess at what point is there a higher standard of proof?
Right. And my point is we haven't gone that far yet.
I understand, Your Honor. But I think at some point you have to make it.
So you're saying that this case is the case where
this
you
is the
invite
case.
Us to go further given what the charge was and given what the relevant conduct quantity was.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But that's what I meant, and I wasn't clear in terms of case law in support of that position. You don't have any law.
No, Your Honor.
To support you from any circuit on that.
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
All right, counsel. Thank you. May it please the court, defendant's relevant conduct includes not only the offense of conviction, but also the conduct which is part of a common scheme.
But how do you go back to way beyond the indictment to 1993?
Pardon me?
How do you go back way beyond the indictment to 1993?
Your Honor, the judge made a finding that it was part of a common scheme that the defendant became involved in the distribution of crack cocaine in Carbondale all the way back, I believe it was 1995, through the time of his arrest. That finding is entitled, in my opinion, less clearly erroneous.
And we're talking about how his argument is, you're coming up here with, what, 5 grams of cocaine and now it's up to 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
By jumping all the way back beyond the indictment and beyond the scope of this?
Well, I think that the case law supports the proposition that relevant conduct includes that conduct, which is part of a common scheme.
But why didn't you supersede? Why didn't you supersede the indictment?
Well, I guess
he could have. Beyond the indictment? That's the question.
I guess that there could have been a superseding indictment, and I guess there could have been...
Then why didn't you file it?
Because from a matter of resources and from a matter of good prosecutorial judgment, it doesn't make sense not to file the easy charge, which is the charge involving what he was caught with.
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, you can hook him in for,
sure.
for the big stuff.
You can take somebody and tell them they're going to be charged with 2 and end up with 100. Do you think that's fair and that's justice? Is that the way your office operates?
Well, I think that every office looks at, in terms of fairness, what the defendants are assumed to know or presumed to know. I think that a defendant who is represented by counsel knows that...
You can assume that he knows
when he's charged with
2 grams that he's going to end up with 1,000?
No, but I think that it's fair to assume that a defendant who is represented by counsel would advise his client that relevant conduct also includes common scheme or course of conduct, and as part of that common scheme, that if you are involved with individuals in a course of conduct in selling crack cocaine, we're talking about 800 different sales of crack cocaine.
Well, and no one is really disputing that. I don't even think counsel's he is, because he's saying in terms of the credibility of the witnesses that testified to that the district court didn't make specific findings, and I'm going to get to that in a minute because I think they're inadequate. But, you know, is it just the policy of your office that you deal with the easy case and you don't supersede and include all the charges?
No,
I mean, that's not the typical practice here in the Northern District of Illinois.
I don't think that's fair to say that it's the policy.
I think in this case, Western District of Wisconsin, this goes to the integrity of your office.
Now, I think in this case, I think it's fair to say that when they looked at the case, they caught somebody with the drug, they charged him. As they started to develop and find additional evidence concerning that case, it became apparent that there was also more involvement. If you look at the pre-sentence report, you can see a litany of like 31 different witnesses identifying him and being involved over
I understand that. And those witnesses didn't just come out, just pop up from the ground. The government discovered those witnesses, and that's what superseding indictments are all about. When you get additional evidence, you supersede, and then you include, you do the entire scheme, you can do the time period, and then the evidence is tested. The jury gets an opportunity to hear that evidence, and the defendant gets to find out exactly what he's charged with doing.
Well, I can't argue with anybody in the court or anybody else that about the fact that clearly it could have been superseded. I guess the issue is, was it fundamental? Is it inappropriate or improper or fundamentally unfair for it not to have been? The discovery is given to the defendant. The defendant has an opportunity to, with his counsel, to meet the charges of the relevant conduct and has that opportunity to make the same kind of argument to the court about what his relevant conduct is.
When the plea was entered, what was the defendant advised as to the possible range of sentencing?
The defendant was advised, according to the particular charge, that it would be up to the 40-year sentence, potentially between 5 and 40 years imprisonment. So he's pleading within that range. He's had the discovery that shows all of these other individuals and their involvement and obviously has the benefit of counsel. So we're talking about a history of case law that suggests that if it's part of a common scheme, that you're going to end up having this be used against you. He's advised at the time of his plea by the court that you're going to face, under the sentencing guidelines, a potential range based upon the amount of crack cocaine and relevant conduct that you were involved with that could go all the way up to the 40 years.
Was he advised that they were going to go beyond the scope of the indictment?
I didn't hear that. What?
Was he advised that they were going to go beyond the scope of the limitation of the indictment?
not specifically. I think he was advised that his sentence would be based upon the amount of his relevant conduct, and that conduct...
Well, what good is that if he doesn't know what his relevant conduct is that you're considering?
Well, I...
You provided the discovery before the plea?
Yes.
All these 900 grams?
On all of those people.
All of the 900 grams?
900 different sales, Your Honor. Yeah. They were involving 31 different witnesses that were outlined in the pre-sentence report. Yes.
So at the time he entered his guilty plea, everybody in the courtroom was aware that you had discovery which showed 900 additional sales?
Yes.
And he was aware of it?
Yes. I didn't talk to him, obviously, and the government didn't talk to him, but we would assume that from counsel or colloquy with the defense attorney that would
have
been...
You're relying on the defense attorney. Did the prosecutor make the defendant and the defense counsel aware of what you were going to do?
Yes, we made them aware through discovery. We gave them the information which would have advised them of the scope and extent of the defendant's involvement. Was it part
not
of the colloquy? No, sir.
The amount.
The amounts were not part of the colloquy, but clearly the reports were turned over to the defendant.
And the reports made reference to the amounts of the sales?
The reports, yes, they did, and actually those reports were turned over to probation, and they were able to glean those amounts from the reports that were provided to the defendant.
Right, so those same reports that probation got were the same reports that defense counsel
yes.
got prior to the guilty plea.
Yes, they were.
You could have told us that 10 minutes ago. That would have been helpful.
Getting back to the amount, and the court indicated that you were going to perhaps question the determination of whether or not these witnesses were believable. The defendant quoted a case, and I'd like to quote a case. It's United States versus Berry, which indicates that district judges determining drug quantities for purposes of relevant conduct under the federal sentencing guidelines are not required to act like agents of the Bureau of Weights and Measures. Precision is not required, as it virtually is impossible to attain in the murky world of drug transactions. What is required is simply reasonable assumptions based upon reasonably accurate information. What the probation department did in this case, I believe, was reasonably accurate information in that they first started off with, so as to avoid double counting, using only the people that were could be classified as involved in the supply side of this distribution group. In so doing, they avoided not only double counting, but they were also able to look at things, and this is part of the methodology that they used, in a way that would benefit the defendant. In other words, when these people talked about being involved in 2 to 5 ounces of crack cocaine every other day, they used the smaller amount. They used the shorter term in making the determinations.
Do you know if who represented the defendant at the plea agreement, time he entered this plea?
Who represented? The counsel.
I'll yes. talk to him.
Okay.
In terms of the court's findings on the credibility of the witnesses, basically the court said that it relied on Ducker and on Johnson, but it was a very brief explanation as to why he found them credible.
Well, I agree it was brief, and I agree that he probably could have gone into more detail, but it's unmistakable that he believed what it was that they were saying and was crediting them. First of all, Tucker was a lifelong friend, didn't even want to be there and testify against him. And if you look at just, I said Tucker, I meant Lavelle Johnson. If you look at just what Lavelle Johnson testified alone, that would be over the 500 grams. That's like 69 ounces. Ernest Taylor, if you looked at him just alone, that would be over the 500 grams. The court is entitled to make a determination, again, reasonable assumptions based on reasonably reliable information. Do we have to go into each and every detail? What the defendant would have you believe is you should throw out every bit of what they've said because these people have walked in and have made a false statement, a statement saying they weren't involved originally. Two of them got on the stand and testified about why they did that. They said that they did that because they didn't want to become involved. One of them said that he had family still in the defendant's and the defendant was still out, but he ultimately came in. The court makes the credibility determinations ultimately and believes these individuals. I guess most importantly, Ernest Taylor was sentenced based upon 500 grams of crack cocaine. Lavelle Johnson was sentenced based upon at least 500 grams of crack cocaine. So you have the co-conspirators being sentenced based upon that too, and the judge was obviously aware of that.
All right, thank you, counsel. Do you have anything else to add?
Yes, sir. Yes, 5 minutes.
Your Honor, with respect to the number of sales, even if there were 800 transactions, it's alleged that Mr. Pugh was selling in $20 amounts, which are approximately 0.1 grams per transaction. So we would be looking at approximately 80 grams. Not only that, but Mr. Pugh has made a proffer himself, and in that proffer he indicated that he thought that he was responsible for approximately 112 grams.
But at the time that your client accepted the plea, he was aware of the potential relevant conduct that might be involved.
I believe that Judge Murphy informed him that probation would be writing an independent report and that there could be less or there could be more.
But you had discovery from the government?
Yes, we did.
Did you read it all over?
Yes, I did. And I supplied a copy of the discovery to my client and summarized that in a letter to him as well.
Well, then he knew in advance that there was going to be 1,000 grams.
He knew that there had been a number of people who had talked about him. But
and
he didn't.
There were going to be 1,000 grams about that.
But he did not know that there were going to be 1,000 grams.
What did he know? 896?
You had not calculated based on the discovery the amount.
I had
not calculated the. I mean, in other words, you hadn't extrapolated from the discovery. And if the court believes all of these witnesses or believes these transactions, that equals 900 grams.
I believe that I gave him a number, Your Honor, but I don't remember what number I gave.
About what? Did you mislead him?
Not that I know of, Your Honor.
Well, all right. Then what did you tell him about how much?
May I check my notes?
Sure. What was the potential sentence you told him that he could have?
Your Honor, in a letter dated April 12th to my client, April 12th, 2001, I quote, I calculate the total amount of relevant conduct to be about 356 grams if proven by the government. The worst witness will be Ernest Taylor, who says that he bought about 250 grams of crack with you. Although I don't know anything about Ernest Taylor, juries often believe witnesses talk about themselves. And then there was other information in there.
So what's the total amount of grams that you told him? 300?
I believe I told him 356 based on the discovery that I had as of April 12th.
Well, did you get more discovery after that?
I can't remember, Your Honor.
Okay. When did you enter the plea?
The plea was entered... on May 21st, 2001.
You were appointed in this case, initially?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you from the Federal Defender's Office in St. Louis, or just...
No, I'm a private attorney.
And the operative amount of grams that gets him in this category is what? Just remind me of that. You know...
I believe that the categories are... Yeah, 150 to 500 is level 34, 500 to 1500 is level 36.
And he was a 36, right?
And he was a 36.
Okay.
Do you think you did your job adequately?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
Okay, all right.
No more, Your Honor.
Is there anything else you want to ask?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
The court will take the case under advisement, and we will have a short conference regarding these cases, and we will proceed with your case. Thank you kindly. Court is adjourned until that time, which will be a short time.